Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome to the Metrospective presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70 celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I'm Ted Berg, joined as always by the Athletics Mets beat writer Tim Britton. And Tim, I looked up Pyrrhus, the Greek guy, and I learned, first of all, that while there is one famed Pyrrhic victory after which he gave his you know, the supposed quote about how he could not bear to defeat the Romans once more. He actually had a bunch of victories like that where he lost tons of soldiers and still won wars. And even after that, and I think this is the bright side here, he was so successful that he was still in demand and people would just, like Sicily, just said, like, do you want to come be our king? Because we know you can win wars. And he would occasionally get offers like that. So I guess the point I'm hoping to make is that maybe the Pyrrhic victory for the Mets yesterday isn't only devastating, because it's tough when the team's playing so well and the Mets have won five in a row as we record this Monday night. And Jacob deGrom, we know, has had this lat injury, and then you see him tense up on the mound and call the catcher out and have to leave the game. Clearly not happy. It's hard to feel good about five straight wins then.
First off, you made me imagine like the idea of Pyrrhus going town to town in ancient Rome, giving like TED Talks about what like, he learned.
I can beat the Romans. I can beat the Romans. Like, what do you need? Like, that's my deal. I can't promise you'll make it, but I'll survive for a while. And then eventually he died in battle.
Here's how you can beat the Romans in your everyday life.
Right.
With DeGrom, yeah, like certainly, you know, he had looked so good the first four innings of that game. You know, I think the way, you know, we've had four no-hitters in Major League Baseball so far, five, really, if you count Madison Bumgarner's seven-inning no-hitter, which was the regulation game, so it should count. That whenever DeGrom takes the mound, you're just kind of waiting for it to all come together for him on one of these outings, because he goes through stretches in games where he looks unhittable. And so, you know, once he got through the second inning, I think it was like the first time all season he got through the second inning without giving up a base runner. You're like, oh, maybe this is it. Maybe he just needed to get through the second. And then, you know, didn't look as good in the fifth, and then coming out for the sixth, called the catcher. You know, it was, I think, the reason to be encouraged is there was nothing alarming on the MRI. The Mets said it came back clean. I know, you know, Buster Olney said basically if you're putting him on the IL, that means the MRI didn't come back clean. I think we can agree that any major league pitcher who gets an MRI probably does not have a fully clean MRI.
I'm not even 100% sure what that means. You know, like, because he's got to have. There's got to be like some sort of inflammation somewhere. I don't know if he's hurt. Something's in there, right? I don't know. Like, I don't know what you can see on an MRI. Like, what? Maybe there's some series of body parts that you can't look at. I don't really know.
I threw six innings from a 60-foot, 6-inch mound in like 2008 or 2009, the only time in my life I have pitched from that distance. I probably threw like 130 pitches.
It's pretty impressive that you got through six innings if you hadn't ever done that before.
Right, yeah. I felt like for a rec baseball game, just with friends from high school, essentially, I only gave up 5 runs in those 6 innings. So I was pretty proud of myself, considering I throw roughly 52 miles an hour. But I had to go to like physical therapy several years later because my shoulder was not right. And ever since then, like, I can't throw more than like 10 pitches. So pitching is not meant to be good for you. DeGrom's not going to have a pristine MRI ever again in his life, probably. But there's no structural damage.
That's a depressing way of putting that, but go on.
None of us will, though, really.
I know that I am at the age when if I hurt something, like if I sprain my ankle, that means my ankle will hurt for the rest of my life. And that's just, that's what happens. But Jacob DeGrom's in good shape and he's a strapping young man. I think he'll have some clean MRIs yet.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen him go through this in the past, in the recent past. You go back to spring of 2018, he had the back tightness that basically prevented him from starting on opening day in spring training of that year. And then he came back and had the best season of his career, a 1.7 ERA, and won the Cy Young. In 2020 last year, he had some tightness in spring training, more back tightness in spring training, and then again during the season on a couple of instances, which is why he probably didn't pitch as deep into games, and the Mets didn't push him as aggressively, starting him every fifth day like they could have. This is within the realm of injuries that he has had in the past, and he has always rebounded from them. That being said, he's 32 going on 33. Eventually, one of these will be the injury he does not fully rebound from. I don't think there's really no reason to believe it's this one. That the Mets should probably be more cautious about it now than they were just last week, because it's two instances of it rather than just one. So, that's why they put him on the injured list. That's why it'll be at least 10 days before he starts, maybe even a little bit longer, just to get all of that out. You want to be sure with it when it's Jacob DeGrom. But it's not a shoulder, it's not an elbow. It's backs are notoriously finicky, as most people know. But you would still prefer to have, kind of the broad back soreness, lat soreness, rather than something, forearm tightness or something in a shoulder for a major league starting pitcher.
Right. And we joke about the clean MRI, but I would take that to mean, there's no herniated discs, there's no torn ligaments, like whatever is bothering him is, I would guess, likely muscular, and so something that could be relieved in time and with all of the advanced medical knowledge that the Mets training staff undoubtedly has. Hopefully we'll see DeGrom back sooner than later. I think it's almost a positive sign. I don't know how to read it. Because if you want to bang the Mets, you could say, why did they let him pitch when his right lat had just been bothering him? I don't think it's a stretch at all to assume that whatever this issue is related to pitching through whatever the last issue is. I can't say that for certain, but that would be a reasonable guess, I think. And so you can say, well, why should he never should have started on Sunday? They should have held him back longer. But I think you can say now at the same time, hey, at least they like pulled the trigger, put him on the DL, didn't try to like test it and see if he could, just take a week off and throw a couple more times and take your time, don't take your time because they need Jacob DeGrom back, but make sure you do this right. Right? Come back when you're going to be able to throw into the seventh inning on that game.
Right. And like he wasn't able to have his typical between starts routine before the last start, before the Sunday start against Arizona.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
He usually has his two bullpens. And so I think if you're like plotting it out and saying, might he come back on May 21st would be the earliest he could start for them in Miami. If he were to come back by then, you would like to know by basically May 16th, which is when he would start that kind of in-between starts routine, so that everything is kind of clicking into place before that. If I don't think you want him just playing catch 2 days before that, throwing a side session that day and then rolling into the start like that, the way they did this last time. I think you, because it happened again, you've got to be a little bit more cautious this time around to make sure that you don't have to put him back on the IL after just a five-inning start or something like that.
The good aspect of Sunday's win, I suppose, you know, while overshadowed by DeGrom's early exit, the bullpen, again, with a really solid performance. This time they allowed one run, but Edwin Diaz came in to relieve Jacob Barnes once he got in trouble and got a five-out save. This unit that we were so worried about earlier in the season seems to be gelling a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's really outside of opening day, the bullpen has been really good. And it's not just, you know, the back end, like Miguel Castro, Trevor May, Edwin Diaz. Those guys have all been really good. May and Diaz in particular of late. Castro had the one hiccup where he gave up three runs, I think, against Philadelphia. But you've got Jairus Familia looks as good as he has in a long time. And it's not like the results are there for him, but he also, you can see that he looks better and more confident and is pounding the strike zone in a way we really haven't seen since he was traded to Oakland in 2018, and maybe even before that point. And then Jacob Barnes, you know, gave up the home run the other day, but has been pretty good outside of that. Aaron Loop has, I don't believe, given up an earned run yet. Tommy Hunter was good in his back-to-back.
Back-to-back, yeah. He threw two innings in back-to-back days and didn't allow any runs. That's huge.
Had a great quote about wanting to stay in the game because he had his no-hitter going after the first inning.
He is a delight, Tommy Hunter. If he pitches well with the Mets, I think Mets fans are going to love him.
And even I remember when the, you know, writing in the offseason about whether the Mets should tender Robert Gesellman a contract, pointing out how bad those up and down guys, that AAA to MLB shuttle had been for the Mets the last several years, where like the guys they were bringing up were pitching to an 8 or 9 ERA over the course of a season. And those guys, you know, Gesellman's been up the whole season, but the Gesellmans, the Tommy Hunters, the Sean Reed Foleys, those guys have all pitched really well for them so far this year. And that allows you to you don't have to rely too much on your back end guys all the time. You can get through a game like Sunday where you stretch only one of them in Diaz, and then you can swallow up some shorter starts. You can win a game where David Peterson goes one, doesn't survive the second inning. You can win when you're employing essentially an opener for Joey Lucchesi or Jordan Yamamoto, and we'll see that strategy probably stressed until DeGrom is back. Until DeGrom and Carlos Carrasco and Noah Syndergaard are all back, the Mets will probably be using that opener and that bullpen game strategy a bit more often.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Well, and we speak of the Mets winning ways, and it seems pretty obvious what's going on here, which is some sort of magic attached. And look, you can point out that it wasn't exactly, the timeline doesn't add up. The Mets have won 5 games in a row entering play on Tuesday, and they had 1-2 already when either a rat or a raccoon supposedly graced the tunnel outside of the dugout in Citi Field, leading to some sort of heated debate, I understand, between Francisco Lindor and Jeff McNeil, who just so happened to exchange tense glances earlier in the game over a miscommunication on a ground ball. But no, they were not fighting over that. They were debating whether or not they saw a rat, whether Lindor claims he saw a rat. McNeil said he saw a raccoon. It was apparently got heated enough to draw the attention of several of their teammates. And now the Mets keep winning games. So is this some sort of totem for them to rally around?
You know, sometimes I wonder if all Major League Baseball teams are just shells designed to sell t-shirts.
Yeah.
And the Mets in the last 10
days. I mean,
they
definitely are, but go on.
The Mets in the last 10 days, between concocting a fictional hitting coach named Donnie Stevenson, who Ken Rosenthal did the digging on to unearth that, yes, it was Pete Alonso in costume, as I think most Mets fans probably assumed.
Right.
All the way through. You know, they're Donnie Stevenson t-shirts. There's the idea that they're going, you know, because they're going back to the black uniforms eventually, there's a lot more black t-shirts for the Mets with the old graphics. And now I assume, I'm surprised actually I haven't seen it yet.
I have
that
already
it wasn't there
seen.
On Saturday and Sunday for like the players wearing it. But I assume on Tuesday there might be a player or two in some sort of raccoon t-shirt because they make those quick.
But yeah, the one I saw someone called both of our attention to it on Twitter was like a road jersey with raccoons, and then there was a home jersey with rats, and so you had to pick if it was rats or raccoons. So it was clever. I don't think, I mean, so like to be real about it, how do you feel? So this clearly didn't happen, right? Well, clearly, I mean, I think it's almost like they said without saying what happened here, right? Like we assume McNeil and Lindor as professional athletes and competitors got a little heated. Their teammates came and settled them down. And they decided, like, let's not make a thing out of this. We can instead make this stupid story up about a rat and a raccoon. Like, let's roll with that instead. And so they are, it's like they're telling the truth, right? Like, the story, the lie sort of signifies the truth, which is like, yeah, this thing happened. And guess what? Like, we're not going to make a public thing out of it. So this is like the alternative to them saying like, well, that stuff stays inside the clubhouse, which is what like 100 years worth of baseball history would point them to do. And so I guess as a reporter, like how do you take that like they're going to come out to the press conference and sort of like give you this like winky untruth that is actually like a pretty colorful story that does illustrate a lot about the 2021 Mets?
Yeah, like I wasn't at the game on Friday. I was actually having dinner with my in-laws when I tried to explain like what was going on, why my phone was pinging. Like, oh, it appears that the Mets saw some sort of rat or raccoon in the tunnel. I don't know. Try to explain baseball in those terms to your in-laws. So, you know, had I been at the Zoom press conference when Francisco Lindor is telling the story, clearly, you know, there's some winking on his part and there's some eye rolling on the part of the media. You know, this is another one of those stories where it'd be helpful to be in the clubhouse to gauge the reaction of like his teammates in real time to something like that, whether that was, you know, just him on his own or choreographed among others beforehand. You know, it's a singular incident, so there's not enough there, and clearly, you know, there's been no tension, at least noticeable, between the two of them since then. And Lindor came out the next half inning and hit a game-tying home run. There's, you know, it's one thing. It's not a, you're not going to try to make too much out of one event like that. You know, certainly if we reach a point later in the season where there are regular tense glances between the two of them or regular miscommunications, you can point back to this as the first instance of that. But we're not there yet. You know, baseball is about analyzing reams and reams of data and events. You don't want to read too much into any one. And this one is not, it's not like there was an actual punch or anything as far as we know. So I don't think there's too much to make out of it now. But, you know, as a, it would be a lot easier as a reporter to confidently say that if we were in the clubhouse and you could see what that interaction is like. You know, for instance, like I know that Jeff McNeil and Pete Alonso and Michael Conforto and Dominic Smith and J.D. Davis, like that is a group that has bonded together in the clubhouse, that they talk in the clubhouse. They sit around in chairs together in the clubhouse. I don't know if Francisco Lindor is part of that group. They've said that he's worked his way. You know, he's been a nice clubhouse presence, that he feels like part of the team. It's been seamless. You know, those are things you would say regardless, I think, as teammates. I don't know what that integration is like for him in the clubhouse in his first season with the Mets. And so it's harder for me to gauge whether this is something or nothing. At the point, I'm leaning towards nothing. But then again, you know, I covered the 2011 Red Sox with the fried chicken and beer in the clubhouse. And that was something eventually, you know?
Right.
So you never know when this, if what it, what starts out as nothing becomes something.
I would hope that the fact they would both be on board with making up this rat or raccoon story and running with it, to me, that almost suggests that they put it behind them, right? That they're both going to play ball here and go with, like, let's just say this rat or raccoon thing that we got, rather than like grumble in any sort of way about the other guy. I don't know. Maybe that's the optimistic side of me. But I would say, like, if you can make it that silly that quickly, then probably you're over it.
Yeah, like it you know, because what was that? The middle of the seventh inning, and then the game ended in nine. So it seemed like they were relatively.
They won the game.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
a key part of it. You know, is that they won that game and they won the next two. And Lindor in particular had his best stretch of this is in the midst of his best stretch of the season as an offensive player. And that makes it a lot easier for these things to happen. You know, if the Mets are in the midst of a 9-game losing streak and that happens, it definitely registers on a different scale.
I will say one thing that makes me skeptical of Lindor's account or Lindor's concern about a New York rat. And maybe it's just that, like, he's heard legends of New York rats, but I happen to know that Francisco Lindor spent some time around Wrigley Field in 2016. And when Wrigley Field was undergoing that renovation, which it was during the postseason, like it was still, they had renovated part of it, but there's still parts of the outside of the stadium that were being renovated. That construction work just kicked up a ton of rats. And there were some huge rats walking around near Wrigley Field at that time. And so I would say that Lindor has already, if he knows it or not, like he's going to be disappointed when he sees our relatively pedestrian, albeit numerous New York City rats.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, and maybe you are more of an expert on them than I am. I've never seen a rat that I would confuse with a raccoon. Raccoons are the things that always surprise me with their size. They're always bigger than you expect.
Tons of, you know what? I run in Central Park now early. There are tons of raccoons. Like you see, like, and they're a little unnerving. They don't seem scared at all. They will just like very slowly walk in front of your path. Like they are not concerned that you're going to stomp on them, I guess, because they have very sharp claws.
Yeah, that is one of those animals that goes from cute to menacing very quickly as you grow up and actually encounter them in real life.
It is not something you would expect to see walking around a baseball stadium. And I would say, like, City Field is pretty clean. Like, and so that was one of the things I thought when I heard that was like that there is like some like City Field operations and maintenance guy somewhere who was watching that press conference like, no, bro. There aren't lots of, I mean, I've never seen rats running around City Field. Shea Stadium, sure, you know, but no, like it's pretty clean. It's new still. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's enough food service going on there that I'm sure there are rats.
We saw, by the way, the City Field scoreboard acknowledged the rat and raccoon thing on Saturday night. How long does the winning streak have to get before you've got like some sort of rally raccoon on the scoreboard, some animated thing dancing around? Does it start Tuesday if they're down in the seventh inning, or does it have to be next homestand?
I think you got to make it to like a 7-game winning, right? Like I think you got to win. They got to win 2 more before it's like this is now a full blown thing. And that's the thing, right? Is there's always every team now. It feels like they settle on something that's going to be their rally thing. Like I remember like the Royals dumping barbecue sauce on each other like several years ago. It just became a thing. And I don't know. So like if this is their thing, great. It's this rat or raccoon deal. I like it.
There are still salt and pepper t-shirts that that I'm sure there are Mets players still wearing from the start of the 2018.
Right.
2018 was that? Yeah, 2018 season.
It's a long season and sometimes players need something to entertain themselves. I will say if Francisco Lindor is looking to see New York City rats, on the Upper West Side, there is a rat colony that has been referred to as the Burning Man of rats. And I saw it one time and it was the most like, so it is this just, I guess, giant, like thousands deep posse of rats that moves around on the Upper West Side. Oh, I was walking down, it was with my now wife when she was my girlfriend and lived in the neighborhood. We were walking down a street and I saw a garbage can that sort of started shaking. And I was like, what's going on in that garbage can? And the garbage can tipped over and it was like the Willard, like the movie Willard. There were just rats like everywhere, just scattered all, like they were suddenly just running all over the street. And that was the day that I found out that I can run faster than my wife.
What a date night that was for you two.
Because I ditched her. It was like every man for himself, every person for themselves at that point. And I got away from the rats a little faster.
And you hold it over her to this day, I'm sure.
No, she holds it over me to this day. She would point out that I also have a higher pitch screen. We got a question from a listener. This is from Nick. And he wants to know, what are your thoughts on the new baseball and its impact on Mets players specifically? Not all teams are struggling to hit, but it seems every season the league has to calibrate to new circumstances, making it difficult for us to evaluate players and results. Could we infer, for example, that the resurgence of Jeurys Familia may be the flip side to James McCann's regression? P.S. How might the front office continue to add depth to adapt to these potential new circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we talk about like offense being different and potentially because of the ball, you know, the league OPS right now across the majors is 702. Last year it was 740. There are, you know, but last year you had a designated hitter across all 30 teams. Mm-hmm. If you go back to let me look up the National League specifically. In 2019, the National League OPS was 753, and so far this year it is 701. So that is a 50-point drop. That's a pretty substantial drop in OPS in 2 years. The thing is, I'm looking at the entire 2019 season. I'm sure if you looked at through May 10th, that the OPS would be lower because it generally, you know, the ball travels better in the warm weather. And I believe, you know, it's still down from the usual April and early May, but it's maybe not as stark as a full season of data. I don't think, you know, I think it is some of the Mets' lack of power has been attributable to that. But off the top of my head, there's not too many examples of fly balls that off the bat I felt were going to leave the yard and didn't. In fact, like Jonathan Villar's opposite field home run in St. Louis was an example of a ball that I really didn't think was going to leave the yard and did, and left it pretty easily. So I, you know, there's still some instances where it goes the other way. I don't think you can attribute, you know, McCann's hitting a lot of balls on the ground. It's not like James McCann has hit a bunch of fly balls to the warning track. And Jairus Smuley is not giving up a lot of fly balls to the warning track. I don't think those two players specifically are guys that I would mention as struggling because of the new ball. You know, and really there's no Mets that I think are struggling specifically because of that. I think it's more, it has been more of an approach thing than anything else with them so far.
Yeah, from what I've read, and so there's a series of good articles on it, or interesting articles on it. They're also good. Good and interesting articles on it on Fangraphs that I read with recent data, looking at you know, across years at what's happening this year, and citing other research too. And it seems like there's some evidence that the ball is a little bit like bouncier but not flying as far, so the exit velocities are actually up, but balls hit in the air are more often outs than they have balls that had been homers in the past. Many are now dying in the outfield, and so there does seem to be some, like, the ball's doing something, and maybe in time it will turn out that the ball favors certain type of hitters. I would contest that if that's true, major league hitters are good enough to make that adjustment and try to make themselves the other type of hitter. And also that, you know, guys who do hit home runs, when Pete Alonso gets into one, it doesn't matter if it's the new ball, like, it's just going to go out. And so, you know, I think it'll mostly be the ball probably docking everyone equally, cutting out home runs from everyone across the board. But I could say conclusively that it is too soon to say that it is, right? It is just way too soon to say this ball is doing something to James McCann or this ball is helping Jairus Familia. Jairus Familia has thrown 9 2/3 innings this season. One time Phil Humber threw a perfect game. Right, like, it's just, there's just no way you can say that that's anything but a small sample to date. So it's an interesting question, it's a good one to think about, but I would say pump the brakes on conclusions or anything you can do to adjust to this.
Like,
sing the song. It's small sample size, etc. It's late at night, or it's not late at night, but it's time that my wife is across the hall trying to put my children to bed. So I don't want to rile them up by really taking deep breaths, but that's what's going on here. It's a small sample size. Maybe next week I'll really stretch out the pipes.
Yeah. Like, I think this is one of those, you've got to get into, some warmer weather, whether, and even maybe on the road. You know, the Mets are going to Atlanta and Miami relatively soon. Tampa doesn't really count because it's indoors, where you get kind of more of an atmospheric effect too, in warmer weather, to see if the ball starts jumping a little bit more than it has in the colder weather that they've played in the Northeast to this point.
Well, Miami is indoors too, right? They almost never open the roof.
You know, I actually haven't checked what they've been doing this year, if they've been more apt to open it, because they go through stretches. I feel like under the new ownership, they've opened it more, but it's been, you know, I had, you know, I don't know what it was like last year. So
that's certainly possible. I know that has been a point of criticism in the past. Like, why don't they open the roof more often? It's nice outside today, but it's Miami, so it's always going to rain in a half hour. Let's see how the Mets are doing. See what the stat lines look like across the board in another month when we get to Memorial Day, and we can say, and even then it'll be too soon to say the ball is having an effect on anybody. We're going to need the whole season's worth of data for that one. That's, like, just the sad truth, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, hold tight. We'll get back to you in
October. Hit pause on that, and we got an IOU, Nick, for an answer. If you have a question for the Metrospective, please email us. You can get at us at, I'm at asktedberg@gmail.com, or you can ask on Twitter. Tim is at Tim Britton. I am at OG Ted Berg. We will be back later in the week with another show, perhaps another animal debate to break down, and ideally some more Mets victories. Tim, thank you and peace out.
It's a Dark Knight appearance to break down. That's the what we'll have to do.
Heyo. So bats entering into the equation.
Maybe on both sides. Adios.